I call the September 6th, 2022 committee of the whole meeting of Franklin Park District Board. Lisa, please call the roll on the side.
Okay, 7:01. Member Bourne?
Yes.
Member Kobe?
Yes.
Member Schneider?
Yes.
Member Stane?
Yes.
Chair Brooks?
Yes. It's our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. Is there anyone who would like to make a verbal comment associated with the comments to 3 minutes per person? And I believe unless we have somebody in the atmosphere.
Nope.
Okay, very good. So we will move to our first item, agenda item, West Park Oswald Grant Discussion. Lisa Shepherd and Kyle Kuz will lead the discussion.
Excellent. So, as you probably read in the memo, we were denied the 2021-2022 Oswald Grant because we were informed that we couldn't make improvements on schools or property. Even though it's leased, if we did, there would be stipulations of the school that couldn't use our property during the school day. So, obviously, that was not our intention. So, we spoke to our Oswald rep and spoke to our architects to see if we could have this project happen on our property only. So I'm going to turn it over to Kyle to do a little presentation and we'll open up for questions afterwards.
Okay. Lisa? So, yeah, and Lisa stated we are working with the Oswald Grant Award for 2022 on that cycle. So today I kind of want to just go over what the approach will be for the 2022 cycle and some of the changes to the scope of the grant application. So on July 12th, we received a rejection letter from ICNR, as Lisa said, citing the award of this agreement. After discussion with ICNR, a follow-up call was determined that we could not really do any work on that piece of property. So internal discussions and further discussion with Hitchcock, as well as consulting with other agencies and industry professionals, determined that the best course of action is to resubmit awaiting any work on the piece of property. So just a little information on the 2022 grant cycle. The same grant we went over in 2022. Deadline is September 30th. We're expected to hear back 6 to 8 months later, so sometime in the spring we would be notified of award or denial. Some changes, primarily in funding, is that $56 million are available this year. There was $30 million in fiscal year 22 or the 2022 cycle. More importantly, the maximum matching amount is about $400,000 to $600,000, so we could potentially capture some additional grant funds. So the approach for the 2022 application is going to be just again avoiding requesting any work be taking place on that new piece of property. And for that, we need no walking loop as an element, and the tennis court will no longer be in scope. And in discussions, we decided it would be a good idea to further develop the picnic shelter area, adding in some additional amenities, making it more of a gathering space. We think it could really play well for families to show up for baseball games or pickleball, or just want to use a unique space with some additional amenities that we don't have anywhere else in the district. So, as I said, it would be picnic tables, game tables, a bocce ball court, and a shuffleboard court. So all things that we do not currently have would make our application a little more attractive and be amenities that the community could potentially use. So this leads us to just an aerial, so we're all familiar with where West Park is and what it looks like. Here's the current setup, baseball field to the northwest, t-ball field to the southwest, tennis courts, open space, and the natural playground, which is more above the tennis courts. So this is the scope that was submitted last year. As you can see, it included the tennis courts and the walking loop, as those elements are not going to be possible in the grant application this go around. The new scope will look like this. So as you can see, everything has been shifted to the western portion of the property. That gets us outside of the leased property, and therefore not within the modified scope. So as we see, the path still remains. It will be a point A, point B, taking you to the modern baseball field to the north, get the T-ball field to the south, and you can see the area right around here is the picnic shelter, shuffleboard court, basketball court, additional area that we kind of developed to make this application more attractive. Now that we pulled out a couple elements from the previous application. This is just for reference for the least piece of property. So you can kind of outline where the tennis court, future pickleball courts are, those lie on our side of the property. The yellow highlighted area is the least portion of the property. Existing conditions, baseball fields are really poor shape. The backstops, dugouts, bleachers, benches are really in disrepair. Lots of drainage issues. Tennis court, this is before they were practical and color coded, but they are in need of repair in the near future. It was more of a stopgap to get us by for a couple of years here. Proposed amenities, again, the future, the additional new player boxes or dugouts with bleachers, benches, artificial infield for the large ball diamond, pickleball courts, walking net, picnic shelter, a rain garden with interpretive signage that would be behind the backstops of the baseball fields, shuffleboard court, and bocce ball court. Project cost estimate. So the total cost estimate is $1.28 million. There's the INR out of $600,000, with parcel match of $682,000. Cost breakdown is highlighting the large elements within the project. You have the walking path, the ball diamond improvements are a major element. The pickleball improvements and shelter and gathering areas are the large big items for the project. So next steps is it's a tight turnaround with a short amount of time once we get the application submitted. The deadline is September 30th. So tonight we're looking for any feedback or questions from the board. We'll be hosting a community input meeting next Monday at West Park at 6 p.m. Board meeting next Tuesday, looking for a resolution to be passed. And then in between now and the 30th, making any final adjustments for tweaks to the application with Hitchcock for submission in September. So with that, any questions or comments?
Just a reminder really quickly, is once we eliminate the walking path, remember that as they grant these five recreation amenities, make sure it's considered. And a lot of those, the majority should be new amenities. So that's why you add the shuffleboard and game tables and pickleball and bocce, because those are all new elements that we don't have anywhere else in the district. Questions, Mark?
Okay, question on the tennis courts. So we just have the single court and we'll convert that into pickleball, which sounds great. And you were short $117,000 for that, but does it disappear? Does that section basically get cut off and just re-poured?
So if we weren't doing the tennis courts at the same time, in theory that's what we would do. The ideal situation is that the tennis courts would be done at the same time outside of the project.
Oh, okay, so
but they
before
the yeah, they would be separate from the outside, right?
Yeah. Outside.
So with the tennis courts, because we put that money in as part of our lease, we pay for any improvements on those tennis courts. So though, any improvements that we make on the tennis courts would be the target responsibility to pay for those.
Okay. Can that may happen as part of this?
It may. That's our recommendation, depending how much we have money available, is to do that whole section at a time. But for ASA application, we're focusing on pickleball. Right. And if we do that, our recommendation would be when those tennis courts, they convert back to only tennis courts. Because right now, they have lines for pickleball. And we're getting a lot of feedback that tennis people and pickleball, there's a lot of high people and those sort of pickleball teams. Courts, so what we recommend is we've got two tennis courts, two pickleball, and the tennis would just be tennis. They wouldn't be hybrid. We just have two tennis courts, two pickleball, and we would be done with that site.
Yeah, so this is thanks.
The sign was not part of the original project as a new board member. Can you tell me just a little bit about how competitive this grant is and kind of I know we have to meet certain requirements to apply for it, but kind of this little bit of selection process that we can get picked next to?
So these might have even better
sense
than I do, but.
So it's really up. It depends how many people apply. So this has been this $56 million is the largest amount ever allocated to ASLAN. But there's also a lot of people out with projects. So it is really a guessing game. How many it depends how many apply and how many are able to be granted and how much they ask for. So, recession, are there people out there that don't have the matching funds available to do a project? That's a possibility. This is, we believe, is a very attractive grant because it hits a lot of amenities, baseball, youth baseball, pickleball, which is a big draw, and those other amenities. We have been very successful with these grants last, you know, 5-8 years. So it may be that we have structuring there. Other grants we can get, sometimes a little higher, harder for our community because of our income level. But it doesn't, we have to try. We can't, you know, if it is, we don't try. So I don't know if you have anything to add.
No, I would say that, you know, this year, there's $56 million of money versus, I think, $30 million was awarded last year. So there is almost twice as much money out there. The grant amount went up by 50%. So, you know, a little bit of that, I think, is, you know, probably the better years to go for.
To go for it, yeah. I mean, we're a little concerned that because we're spending the same thing that they won't forget about that. We're right next to a school property, so that might play into it. But we are not on police property, so it shouldn't.
Do they sometimes say, like, give you the grant and not get the $600,000? Like,
they
will
get $400
for
$700,000? Oh, yeah, sometimes they do that. Sometimes they have a large amount. Sometimes they say, oh, we don't think this is a mandy, or most of the time they give you what you ask for because they know that you don't have mandy, but or you have additional funds, all those other ones. So if they lower by $200,000, you come back and say, okay, we can't do this at this point.
We had talked at one point about that, and I know it's like $500,000.
But
did you talk to the school district about that?
Yeah, I did. It is $450,000 for bathroom. And they don't even know if they, because of escalation costs, when we first talked about that side of it, it was going to be $400,000. So when I talked to Catherine, they don't even know now price escalation, it looks like for the walking path and the tennis courts and this other student body area, it's past $700,000-$800,000 now. They only have $400,000. So they don't even know if they can do that whole loop. And we're going to readjust it once. You know, it's going to take a good year before this project gets done. Hopefully, costs go down a little bit, and we'll really revisit whether we do the whole path or with their help. But right now, they only have 400,000 for the path only, not for everything else they want. So.
That question also said this would be part of the 2024 project.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, grant money awarded in the spring of 2023 in the time of this architecture organization, the drugs, and well, so it would be in 2024.
But no, there was no indication that they're like, that's one of the NDA ones that they didn't want something that they would.
Okay. I'm going to ask a question that you guys are going to think is typically Michael Coovey. Can you get creative with the lease?
Go ahead.
Well, sorry, that was our first move was lease language, and after the change of lease language, we had a problem called IDNR. And that's when it became apparent that that would be sufficient.
Okay.
So yeah, that was our first.
I would have promised that the school would never use this, any of that property for program use, and I could not do that.
That's fine. That's just make sure I can do that. If today is the 6th,
yeah.
Is Monday enough notice for the neighbors?
We already sent out the notice, so we've already started advertising the notice for community meeting.
Is it going to be available on the interweb as well for those that can? What?
We're actually holding it at West Park, so people can actually see the site. So no, it's not.
Okay. We should just be prepared for any challenges. Sometimes we get short notice. This is a legitimate reason that we get short notice, but. Just doing that.
And there's also this meeting they could have attended also.
It is, but Well, don't love to have like 6-day notice on or 8-day notice on a meeting. Is there any commitment with the OSLAD grant that we need to be aware of? Like there is with the beach, we have the OSLAD grant.
Yes, we would have to allow non-resident use on the field.
Perfect. This is going to sound a little silly as well, so I'll ask anyway. now understand why they have a shuffleboard court. I think it's a very cool feature. We don't have to supply the shuffleboards and the sticks and the discs, do we? Because I can't imagine that people are going to want to bring.
Yeah, so what our thought is, we've been so successful with our trains that no one has stolen them, that our plan is to try to find a box that would fit the equipment, keep it available for people to use on an honor system. If it becomes a problem, you know, we haven't had that with the trains.
Trains are a little bit heavier. Things.
They're a little heavier that people could.
And they can't do anything with you.
So we could also offer the option where they can rent them from the community center.
Okay.
So, or for free, you just come and get them when they have to pick them up here.
Give their license or something. I'm fine with them, but now that have something, they make a heck of a lot more sense. I wish there was something that we could put there that you didn't need to have equipment for.
I know.
Like a ping pong table that they have at Central School. Because it's very easy to bring your paddle and your ball. It's not so easy to bring four shuffleball sticks and this, but.
And we could change it out, but I don't
think
this should work.
We suggested
the shuffleboard. I
love shuffleboard.
I love shuffleboard.
The problem with shuffleboard is who's going to play with no equipment?
There's been a resurgence of old time games down the city, and then city people moved to suburbs for shuffle and they have shuffleboard and basketball games.
I'm a huge shuffleboard fan. Unlike basketball, it's kind of a pain to bring equipment there.
Yeah.
So, but if we have to have something that fits the space and we think it's going to help us play, I now understand that.
Does it have to be an amenity that you don't have anywhere else without
that? That gives you more points. If you do. The native signage that you can have everywhere, they just at Pollinator Gardens, they just really like that and then being every park.
So we're going to go from, let's say, 5 p.m. to midnight, a walkway, and hope the school builds from midnight to 5 p.m. around the point.
So
that'll
be phase two.
And then he's hoping the ability to
close it
at some point.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Another clarification point. So the school can't use this for, like, gym class?
This is Park District property, so as long as we have access to the public, what can happen is that we can't get the school priority use, so it has to always be open for the public. But if kids are out there playing gym class, this particular school doesn't have a baseball team, and that would be after school anyways, but there's nothing that simply they can't use it just during the day, but they can't schedule it. So for example, right now, for tennis, the tennis courts, for example, in our lease agreement, they have the right prior use over anybody else that is their property. So this week and last week, they were doing the tennis lesson on the court, so we had post-permitted school use only from 8:30 to 3:30, which should cause some friction. But when I explained to the pickleball players that was part of our lease agreement, that's why we're able to have these courts here, we wouldn't be able to if we didn't have that lease from the school district. With Oslo, you cannot do that stipulation, so you could not use it for program use for the. So we could not dedicate it to the school district for school gym class, for example.
So a lease overrides the neutral prioritization. A lease says, "Hey, school, you have the right to prioritize your use and her public.
Yeah.
If you're not using the public, you can use it. Fine."
Yes.
And then Oslo requires. There would be no prioritization, including open to non-residents.
Right.
So really, for the
courts, if someone's out there playing, say a resident's out there playing kickball, I don't know, during the school day, the school would just use their property. But if no one chooses it, there's nothing to say. We're not going to be out there going, oh, you can use your property, fine. They can use it. Kind of similar to a playground that's owned by a park district next to a school. They just can't say no one else would want a playground. The school would use it, but they can't use it.
It can't be
that unusual for Parks and Rec fields to be connected
As long as it does happen, and we know there's other communities that have gotten has that grant.
Right.
For example, Oak Lawn has a playground, and part of their community focus groups was to contact the school and ask if the kids wanted it, because they knew the kids were coming over.
Oh, yeah.
For recess. The big difference is they can't say no one else would want it. Where this property, gym class, you can't have gym class going on. They would say no one else would want the courts, because they're using all the courts.
So,
and by the way, it's a real practical explanation when you explained it to the pickleball folks what the situation was. They immediately got it, said, great, and we'll come back when they're no longer playing, the classes are. So the people understand.
Yeah, it's just what they knew the reason that it wasn't for us.
They were very accepting of that explanation.
Okay, I have a silly question, and I'm going to be done asking questions about this. Does it help to get our constituents to write notes or letters to IDNR?
Absolutely not.
It does not
help. The biggest thing is to show support in the community meetings or a lack of disagreement. It's probably more impactful.
Because I know what we do publicly is when we want something to get done in, let's say, Congress, we absolutely have customers write letters and things like that so that they can see this is something that I think would be great on the 12th, to highlight some of these benefits, like the pickleball court being able to be used. Public has full reign on the pickleball court at any time. This is the first, it's 50-50, pickleball tennis court. It's a great way to use it. We do this, we do that. I'd love to see a real genuine consensus, maybe a letter from the community that we can attach to.
We do actually get letters from our representatives that we will attach to the project. So we do get letters from our state representatives, village president, things like that. But I don't think they would like 100 letters in the community.
No, not 100, but one letter signed by 100 people would be, I think, powerful. But you guys
know probably would, but I don't know if we have time. So I think it's more.
Got it.
I think it's showing that we have community meetings and there's support at those community meetings. Being more to them. Any other questions? So what we're going to ask next Tuesday is a resolution authorizing us to apply for the grant, and then we'll work out the rest of the details. This is concept that what we can do is we can't say, oh no, we don't want to do that, and take it fully out. So if you don't want something more, you want to take a this is the time to do that. This is or Bagel, if you would like to see those amenities, instead of shuffleboard or instead of bocce, now is the time to tell us. And that's an easy switch out.
I will tell you, I love shuffleboard. I think you'll probably have more success or more usage with something that requires less bigger materials. But that being said, I don't have a strong opinion on it. So,
what do you think?
I think it's more of a draw to have an entity I can't have at home.
Yeah.
Right.
I can play ping pong at home. I can play cornhole at home. I can't play shuffleboard at home.
Shelby?
I think that's a good point, because even though it requires most people aren't going to go to the
shuffleboard.
And a lot of people do that.
That's
the thing
that lost
too. I mean, you
can
bring it wrong.
No, that's the thing. It's I don't see this. It's not a big deal. I just don't see people bringing their own shuffleboard equipment there. But I don't really care too much. I watch those kids at Duke Park. They do weird things.
They do weird things.
Whatever. I mean, it's like it's talking about probably $50 reinvestment, so it's not a big deal.
Right, exactly. That's what we have.
Well, the trains are like probably hundreds.
They have to come here.
Some kind of lock cabinet where you have to call the school. We'll figure that out. There's some workaround once we discover whether this is going to be a Jedi. Yeah.
Barbara? No, it's fine.
Go for it.
All right.
Shuffleboard it is.
Awesome.
I challenge that thing in the first match.
And I teach Sam to, for all the work that he did to put this, I can just imagine this whole thing together and then realize you've got to redo and get all your ducks in a row all over again. We do appreciate that all the extra work that is unexpected, but you jumped on it and that's great. Because if it works, it's great for the community. And if it doesn't, it's still what you can do. So, on to the Children's Circle Restructuring Plan discussion. Lisa Shepherd, Bobby and Jessica will lead the discussion.
Yeah, so I'm just going to throw it over to Bob Jessica. Just a sort of reminder, we've challenged staff to try to figure out a creative solution around our the childcare crisis, and that's really what it is. And they really have been working on this probably for a good 5-6 months to try to find a sustainable method. Because remember, what we give today, we can't take away next year if things turn around. So it's like something that can be a living thing moving forward. So if there are many vetting processes, we feel this is the best plan moving forward. So, Jessica?
So we'll start with some of the specifics to talk about in the report package. So the employment remains 12.1% below the 16-year level, and the early childhood is actually the hardest, we're still below the 4-year level. Because of this, there are half-million families that are frustrated about what lack of childcare. And because there are so many parts of different schools, we have very low ratio in our ratio of 1-4. So, that's why our fixed costs are so much higher. Public funding is about $1,500 per child for a child under the age of 5, whereas the public school child is about $13,000. So women, of course, are the most affected by childcare. They are childcare workers, and they are people who typically go out of work if they don't have childcare. Women as childcare workers, the median for annual earnings is $28,000, which is, of course, not a livable wage. Women as childcare workers take up 93%, and 41% of those are females of color. However, mothers are nearly 3 times as likely to spend at work dads despite COVID-related childcare issues, that's the reason why they were not employed. And they noted that people who are leaving the childcare industry are leaving without a paying benefit in other positions. So some critical key information is our open from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. 6 weeks a year. We serve children 6 weeks to 5 years old. We are doing DFS licenses, which comes with a lot of regulations. We have 6 classrooms, and each of those classrooms has 1 full-time lead teacher. We have 25 to 40 part-time teachers for our 90 to 95 students, and 82% are medical licensed officials and parents. So our program analysis, the strength of our program retention, we rarely have children leave, which is why our waitlist is so long. We have a strong customer base. Our facility and classrooms, of course, are in great shape, and our operating procedures and program structure. Our weaknesses, we have a high percent of part-time staff, which leads to staff retention and recruitment issues. We have a very high call-out rate. We don't go a day that someone doesn't call out. Benefit structure, right now only our 6 full-time are offered any type of benefit. Opportunities, there's very little competition in the area. When my parents call me, they often ask me, if I can't get on your wait list, where can I go? And the nearest school I can recommend is Northfield. Increase in dual income families and lack of caregivers, especially after COVID, it's much harder to get no care from overseas at this point. Threats, increased competition and enrichment and half day programs. We have a lot of parents who try to piece together their child care. The changing demographics, we have a lot of parents who work from home, which changes the child care needs. Increased DCFS standards and significant increase in the labor and benefit costs for the program.
So, obviously, the board knows we've talked about multiple times. Children's Circle is not immune to this crisis. Currently, 29% of our staff, all in part-time positions currently. We have 6 full-time leads, and we have 19 assistants. Pre-crisis, we were about 25 to 40, depending on our structure, for the current level of students we have. So staff has been doing a lot of analysis over the last number of months, as we talked about. One of those was an absenteeism. So for 72 days, we tracked how many calls there were. We had 170 call-outs during that period of time. 8 were for full-time staff, 162 were for part-time. And we know this, full-time staff are a lot stickier, they stay in their jobs a little longer, they've got more buy-in. Part-time staff, they all have to work multiple jobs, they have to work 2, 3, 4 jobs from what we're hearing from them. So sometimes we are not the priority. Not often we pass our absentees in place. Over the last 6 months, we've lost 14 staff members. One was full-time, 13 others were part-time, came on back to the city commons. Majority of them have full-time employment and benefits, that's what we're hearing. They're able to get them in almost all other facilities they can, hopefully also. And the result is we sent a lot of children home because we were not able to have them care. We have our early childhood managers and teams and Jess and our coordinators in classrooms on a daily basis. We pulled myself, we pulled other district managers in to keep classrooms open, we've done everything we can, but we're at the point where this is just not sustainable. So this is our current benefits to the three different types of employees we have. And with our full-time regular employees, you can see there's a pretty extensive benefit range there for them, from health insurance, dental, peak day time off, IMRF, sick time. Then we have our part-time, we're working greater than 20 hours a week, probably around 30 hours a week. And their benefits are IMRF, they get some COVID, they get COVID pay at the moment, and then they can get personal days as well.
Less than 20 hours a week, you get days off, but greater than you get still paying?
Greater still, it might be paid. Greater than 20, you get 3 to 4 days per year. So this is just
under 20.
Got it.
If under 20, sorry, yes, if you don't get it, you just get those COVID sick days.
Got it. Okay.
Fitness center memberships, our beach passes, our strength those types of benefits. So of our 6 current employees who are getting health insurance, dental and vision, and paid time off, 5 of them are on single coverage right now. 1 is on plus spouse. So you can see the majority of them are requiring that single care option for health insurance. And that has been a trend since I've been in the district, where they really are looking for just themselves covered. When we looked at analysis of the surrounding programs, we looked at Botanic Gardens, Bright Life, and Northbrook, Highland Park, Community Nursery, and the Inner Pairs, which are kind of top competitors in the local area, we have the least reach out of all of them for our benefits. So we're giving access to this amount of employees. You can see Highland Park, Community Nursery, and Inner Pair offer insurance for anybody who works there currently. So when we're competing against that, that's very challenging. What you will notice is our benefits are excellent. So they're highly subsidized for the employee, that they're very high quality. You'll notice in our other programs in the area, they're often a lot more expensive to the employee, and they're not as good quality benefits.
Some of the things that we've done so far, in terms of staff recruitment, we use care.com, which we have a care program, but it's about businesses. So we've been messaging people on their page. We met with over 100 individuals, we hired 2 people. We use a recruiter, we paid about $600, and we have not had any applicants actually show up for interviews. We use Handshake, which is a worldwide one that goes to all local colleges that have schools of education. Again, we have not had anyone who does job fairs, and then we have the employee referral program, which we've gotten one employee out of. So our weekly hours. Right now, we have 240 hours of lead time, which is our 6 weeks, 512 assistants for a total of 761 hours. If we are fully staffed, we've got the same amount of lead, but our assistants would actually be at 797 hours. With our proposal, the lead stays the same. Assistants would be full-time staff, would go to 360 hours, and closers would be part-time, would be 255. The reason that it's lower than it's fully staffed right now. for our older classrooms to only require two teachers would get one assistant. This was created so that there is someone there at the beginning of the day and at the end of the day who would see their child all day.
Why is there coverage for Starfish involvement in the
So it's, they would be a slower because they open together. So dolphins and blues open together and then turtles and starfish open together.
So they're combined in one room with the
yeah.
style of point.
Yeah.
So what does this grade step and that look like? Well, here you see the top lines, the grade one currently, what staff is paying for those level coverage, which is very, very good. Now this may change a little based on what happens next year, where my top grades are. But the new grade we recommend for grade seven is this one on the bottom here, and what it does is it really provides great benefit for the employee who really needs single coverage or employee plus a child benefit, which is what we're seeing is attracting the majority of people to facilities on the North Shore and around us. So what we're doing is we're highly subsidizing single and child, employee plus a child here to attract here while keeping the expense and the potential liability to the district low that all those employees would utilize highly subsidized family coverage. So the impact of this, you will have seen that Jeff talked about the overlap. Based on full staff, we would probably see about $145,000 saving with this new model, having full-time staff and the reduced overlap. And that would be on budgeted fully staffed, which we know in this environment is just not realistic. The nine full-time eligible employees, that would be about $100,000 expense per year. If they all took that grade staff and children's plan. And then we're also seeing significant pressure on wages with our preschool staff right now. We're seeing people getting $6 and $7 raise offers to other surrounding schools. And we're just going to have to make market adjustments if we want to be able to keep staff. So we estimate that at about $100,000. So you can see there's a pretty significant financial impact on us. There is grants available. You know, we've been very lucky. The federal government and the state clearly sees the crisis in the industry and has tried their best to support. We will apply for those, and we hope to get them, but we can't guarantee them. We think that will be able to, if they are available, again, will help a lot. But again, we just want to go in with eyes wide open, and those may not be available. We may not get them. So. The district currently has a policy that was created in 1988 with the program of Holdens that this program would be all direct and indirect expenses and would not have no tax dollars used to keep it in operations. Going forward, we can't say that's going to be maintainable to keep the program open. In all reality, we're seeing significant cost increases and we're seeing desperate parents for care who are also seeing significant cost of living adjustments throughout all of their living and their other expenses. So we don't necessarily have pricing power to increase the cost of the program significantly, although we will have to do that over time. So we just want the board to fully understand that going forward that this program is likely to need some assistance. So what we're looking for is we're looking for board incentives to add 9 full-time staff immediately using a grant that we just received of just under $65,000 we just got word we received, which will help pay for the remainder of the year. We're also looking for the board to change the policy that this program will likely not be able to cover all this direct and indirect expenses going forward into the future.
We do think it'll be able to cover direct and indirect are the ones that are most intangible, I have asked, building costs, replacing of the things like playgrounds and things like that.
And we will be budgeting, you know, carefully, and we're about to start the process. We just are kind of laying out the worst case scenario here. We'll be very cautious with the budget, but we just want the board to be fully aware of what's going on.
And we don't feel it will be subsidized by taxpayers, but it will be subsidized by other programs within the recreation department. So other programs that may have received more. That can cover all their direct and indirect expenses and then some will then know what will be this program, so.
I'm not sure that matters. Right, I'm not sure that matters. Like,
well, I'm just being honest with you.
Yeah, no,
the other policy that was before was
right.
telling me that we can no longer do it, so we will have to change the policy.
The fundamental question is, you know, and it's something that if we have to think about, the fundamental question is, well, do we want to shift and let other programs or taxpayer dollars or something that's not directly related to tuition from Children's Circle to fund Children's Circle? And that's it doesn't make a difference what ends up funding it, whether it's the beach that funds it or taxpayer dollars that fund it, right? So I think that's
the beach.
No, but certainly what we want. I mean, I think that is one question, whether or not, you know, we want to do it. And the second, the big question out there is, how are other daycares doing this? How is CCYF doing it? How is Northbrook doing it? How is the JCC doing it?
They're not. They're closing.
Yeah, I talked to the federal child director at Glenview Park District today. They have 17 children and 4 teachers left. They closed their back day to school officially.
So what happens to those kids? Like, my daughter is, you can't close the back day to school, you can't have it in the next time you day. And then you have a crazy demand for the DLC programs and piecing together a day of care.
Which we were limited.
Which you couldn't staff.
We can't do it because of, if they're in a building model for 4 hours, Jeff.
They have to take a nap.
They have to take a nap, which means they're licensed.
Yep.
So.
Hopefully we hire these 4 teachers that just left with you. Look, can I ask you just a different question completely? Is there any, one of the things you put on there was surprising, I read about it earlier, was that the requirements are becoming more stringent from DCSF. Mm-hmm. Why aren't we, other daycares knocking on the door saying, look, we need relief. I mean, every industry, everything out there has had relief from COVID related things for the past 2 years. You've had PPPs, you've had different funds, you've had grants, you've had loans, you've had, you know, relief everywhere. Why is DCSF making things harder at this time?
Because their job is, that's a great question. And their job is to take care of children.
I hear you. I'm just curious. I know if they went somewhere wrong. It just seems that they're things are wrong all the time. Are they? I'm not a childcare expert. I just. Is a 1-4 ratio the right number? Could be 1-4.
Here's the thing, Michael. That any effective change in DCFS would take major lobbying and years to change, right?
But the crisis is as bad as you guys say. I'm just surprised that no one, that DCSF isn't sort of saying, okay.
They've had 6 rounds of childcare restoration rounds, but
we're
hopeful that that continues, but again, that hopeful is not a business model to rely on right now. So we really do hope that that will continue. It's the only way I see the industry surviving at the end of the day. I don't see them changing the regulations because we are in a very small bracket of programs that are able to do what we do. Most struggle in everything. Like we're not a traditional preschool or
daycare. The juxtaposition of the struggle with daycare and the doubling of the OSLAD grants when these daycares, I get that through the budget, but it's all under one governor, right? So it just blows my mind. It's like, oh, we have 30 million extra parts and yet daycare is in childcare as opposed to.
This is like commentary. So is the grant being funded by ARPA funds, the American Rescue Plan Act, and that's going to run out all of those money that's going to be spent by 2024. So does that mean this grant that is funded is also sunset after the following school year?
So it's funded through INCUR,
which is federally funded through the ARPA. That's where originally it's coming from, and it comes from it.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it is going to run through.
Yeah.
But they're going to have to, the issue can't survive without it.
So I would just caution to rely on the state grant, given
So that's
I agree, but that's why we're being honest. That's why we're being honest with you that this is a, it, we're going to pay for this year with the grant money, but we can't rely on that. We're going to keep on going for them, but a bad business model to rely on those grants.
Yeah.
So you just have to know that going in. And eventually, hopefully, we'll be able to catch up with tuition, but we just can't make that big of a jump right away. That'd be unaffordable to most of our families, and just be, with everything else that's happening, it's already a high amount.
Yeah, and all of our taxes
Our tax bills can only go up by 5%. Can only go by inflation.
And that's your house
is
reassessed?
Yeah, no, well, house is reassessed.
Yeah.
Like, that's how that, John and I had that discussion. If everyone's house, if everyone's assessment goes up 30%, everyone's tax goes up 5%. But I think the question that I am, I'll give you my 2 cents on all this. I am perfectly fine with the investment in Children's Circle. I think it's good for our community. I think it's good for our parents. I think it's good. And I think we can fund it the next few years we can. I am somewhat cautious about doing this into perpetuity. And, you know, if the way that the grants in government work, where you kind of have this 2-year thing, like if we want to say, well, for 2 years, we should do these things and then consider a tuition catch up or reconsider for 2 years, I feel more comfortable with that than just by blanket saying, okay. Going forward, tax dollars don't have to subsidize Children's Circle. If we need to do it for 2 years because we're in a crisis, I think that should be an option. But like, I don't feel comfortable right now.
We can't rely on the grants for 2 years. Right. We're going to get them.
But that's
So the only way we can't give a benefit then take away.
Right.
And even if people leave, you cannot say these full time people have benefits and then. 3 new people come in, they have not. You want to talk about morale issues? They'll leave right away. So
yeah.
I'm just being honest. If once you offer a benefit, you have to. We're locked into offering that benefit to make this program sustainable.
But you know, this whole thing is a paradigm shift in something that COVID forced that needed to happen anyway, and that's valuing care by of young children, which is seen by that it's seen as something that has very little value because people do it for free.
Right.
So, you know, my experience this week is, I'm coming home with elder care as well, and, you know, stories of idiot teenagers in Oshkosh, Wisconsin making $17 an hour at a subway shop. This is valued at $17 an hour, and we're struggling with giving full-grown adults who have a very difficult and very important job, giving them a decent wage. So I feel like this is forcing it. I do think that sophisticated countries that do a good job with their child care, they always have state funding of child care, and that's coming down the road. When is it going to happen? 2 years, 5 years, 10 years? This is a massive problem in the country, and we're confronted by many people. Do we want to close? No. Do we want to see this through? I think the answer is yes. We have subsidized hockey. We have subsidized boating. We have subsidized many, many programs over decades and decades and never really questioned it. And I think this is a chance for us to say whether it is even subsidizing, because I suspect that all of that money that went to redoing the playground was hundreds of thousands of dollars that they contributed to redo that playground. If they're not building money for capital funding, you know, maybe they'll still be able to meet many or most of their expenses.
I think they'll be able to meet all their bracket. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just think this is something that we need to embrace as an issue, a cultural and societal issue in Glencoe that is really critical. There's a lot of young families with children. Do we support them? I think we do, and that's going to require something of us, and it may have to get looked at again in 2 years because the dynamics of all of this may change, but I'm in great support of it, and I will tell you, I had a baby in 1988, and I lived in Glencoe in 1988, and I will tell you, it was a horrible situation to try to find child care while I was working, and it had a detrimental effect on my career, and I really would like to do something
to try to support families and women who are most impacted by this, now that I have a chance I'm sitting at this table. So that's my beef of the week, and I apologize if I upset anyone, but I'm in total support of what the staff has diligently worked on for, I'm sure, months and months, and come up with a practical solution to this. And I think we do need to offer competitive benefits and salary to people and get in some full-time teachers, which I would think benefit the quality of the program overall as well.
Absolutely.
I have a question on like tier one and tier seven. Do you think that will be an issue if someone applies and they're full time, they're from, you know, a competitor or whatever, they're going to notice the difference between the other full time people? Do you think that's going to be an issue?
I don't think so, just because our full time right now are all leads and who are hiring is assistants, so there is a difference in their job duties.
If a lead leaves and comes in,
so there's actually, we're subsidizing more on the single coverage. You notice that there's actually about a $240 delta between single on grade one and grade seven. So there's actually helping people who needed more subsidy on the single. But you're right, it is more expensive if you need family care, and that's where we hope that the person has either got a spouse or a partner who's able to help. And that's really what a lot of the other descendants are doing. They're really subsidizing the single coverage, which is helping with the ACA. You know, currently we are subject to, as you saw in the memo, ACA penalties right now. So there may be some additional savings there. But we're also looking at potentially offering a buyout for people. So somebody, say we have a teacher who's about to, you know, in the last 5 years of their career, they're not going to get married, and they're like, I just want single coverage. We potentially could move them over to the grade seven and get more people over there, so there's less of us versus them. Yeah. We thought through all that. We think this is really, it's not going to solve all those problems, not definitely, like I said, going to solve a lot of our problems, but it is going to be a huge step in the right direction.
And the insurance that we're offering is so much better than our competitor.
HMO.
Which is much better than what others are offering.
The teachers that left, and I know, I think you guys had two, by renegotiating their rate, is that correct? So this, when you added that third line item of that -1,000, is factoring in raising everybody else, I assume, to the same rate.
Yeah, so JCYS left raised their rates to 18 to 23, and so they poached some of our teachers, so we counteroffered.
And I authorized that.
Yeah.
We had no choice. We would have to turn around and do the close down if we were one of those people who did that. And we would have lost three students immediately, which shows that our teachers love working here. Because as soon as Justin makes that, we can offer you the same amount, they didn't even think about money. So it shows you it's based on money and benefits.
So they're now making more of this.
GCYS getting some other funding?
Okay, so that's my question.
You're going to change that.
So that figured into the calculations that once we did that, we knew we would have to go through the minimum we were going to do to raise our funding. To be honest, it does bother me. Bus drivers are in that's our job too. But they're making $22,000 an hour. We have some people to carry for our infants.
Does GCYS get additional funding from the Federation or something, or?
I could
think.
I can find out.
What?
I think.
So like, I'll tell you, I love the idea, and you are 1,000% correct, Lisa. And it's like this, I can't turn off in my brain that the person at Subway making $17 an hour is making $17 an hour because Subway can raise rates and can cover that cost. I don't understand either why A, our state doesn't fund it, which I think is an absolute right question, why is the state not funding it, or B, why we can't raise our rates. And I'm not saying that we should. I just don't understand how this all works. I don't understand how every other daycare, because I think we should have rates that are comparable to other daycares out there, but if they're, we can't compete, if they're getting funding from...
We're at the highest, right? We're
at the highest.
Our rates are the highest tuition rate.
The only tuition rate that's
all of
this.
So how do they survive? Like, I don't understand how they're surviving.
So
churches
may be subsidizing
them. Yeah. That's the thing that we have. What? GCC makes all their money off the camps, by the way. That's where they make their, everything else is a loss.
Which our historical program feeds all of our other programs as well. So
right.
So you have your members for 10 years.
So
when they come into our, they come into our Children's Circle program, believe me, they are staying for life. So they're coming to our camps, they're coming to our other programs.
So that's a different
year. You moved here for it, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So,
but that's a different story, right? I'm sorry, again, I'm going back to my world. That's a, you fly from Milwaukee to Chicago because it subsidizes everything else. So if there's an argument out there, and I think there's a decent one, which I didn't see before, that Children's Circle ends up being a loss leader. Ends up being a loss leader because it's going to fund future people using our gym, using our beach, using our hockey, using our thing. That is not taxpayer subsidized. That is future subsidy, future people's profits are going to subsidize.
Well, that's why I said.
And
I
love it. I just think it's crazy that we have to have this argument because we, quote unquote, subsidize so many other offerings. What makes this different? Like, I what you were saying, Lisa, like, I don't know how much we subsidize different recreation programs, right? I mean, but why is signing your child up for an hour of baseball more valuable than someone signing their child up for an hour of preschool?
I mean, I personally don't know what our fixed costs are, and I think it's a question for John. Like, does our, you know, we don't have the greatest accounting system out there to say that, and we don't do that accounting, right? We don't do that. And so the question is that, you know, at some point, he's kind of going down.
I was going to ask,
like, does our tax base, sorry.
I'm not going to put you on the spot. I was just thinking that. Is there a you look at the residents expenses, are we really sure that we're not overestimating some of those expenses? I mean, I hate to put them aside, but having to pursue also, you know, tangential risks.
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and yeah, unfortunately, you don't really, we aren't activity-based in our county, it's fund accounting, and the Children's Circle is in the recreation fund, so it's really where we're running our results. We are able to kind of drill down to some of the programs and some of the contractual offerings, and really see, you know, what the margin is on some specific programs just for direct costs. So when you get into those indirect costs, it's really, that's where the money is the water. We had an overhead contribution, a building overhead contribution that was really kind of a subjective number that was being applied to Children's Circle. For many years, as I was kind of transitioning in with Carol kind of talking through that number, it was something that we kind of looked at and said, well, you know, this really hasn't been looked at in a while. It was really kind of initiative of the remodel taken with something. So that's just one example there. And then you have some other funds paying some of the costs too in the form of IMLF and FICA. So it is somewhat money in the local water and trying to identify specifically like this is the true.
But I do.
I get it.
My hunch is that my hunch is what's going to help me push this over my mind is, gosh, if you had like a bunch of analysts here, I would use them to high heaven. But my hunch is that you probably do get more revenue and more profit off people who start off in Children's Circle than you do those who don't. I'm using myself as an N of one. And how much money I have given you, the Park District, over a number of years from having my son Levi in
look at the great services
in Children's Circle. When I will have you guys know, just 7 years ago, you begged me to join Children's Circle because the numbers were low. So isn't that just funny?
Well,
how the world
a quality program
is changing. Levi was a trailblazer.
Yes. Well, that's another way to look at it.
Yeah.
So Barbara, I don't know, you know, I have specifically asked you, do you have any questions or thoughts on this at all?
I agree with the discussion. I had a big picture sort of perspective, and you covered a number of detailed points supporting that, but it seems to me that big picture, we have very solid children's circle done well, and then we've been in a storm for the last few years, started with COVID, then inflation, then energy prices, and a lot of turmoil. We're not through that. And you're talking about restructuring, turning to permanent staff, raising compensation, and you say we're already at the highest level of pay. It seems to me there's going to be more surprises, but somehow in the next 2-3 years, we'll work through that and get back to stability. And if we're having trouble, there'll be a lot more preschools out of business. I mean, the country will, I don't understand. You know, I think we're in a really good place. We just want to support the program, fund it well, and maintain the high. We want to get away from the turnover like we've been having that really upsets the parents and creates opportunities for surprises. So if you have a much higher level of turnover people, they're paid well and get to 100,000 to get them to a level. We see that we can get through the next 8 to 36 months fairly smoothly, and more smoothly than other schools. And then at that point, say, hey, things have settled out. Here's what we have to be. Here's what we have to change. But I don't know. It's hard to see what's going to happen. It seems to me. So you're well positioned better than almost anybody.
I just want to say, I think we're at the highest cost.
Highest tuition, not highest salary.
I would say one thing I would like to see is that if the 100,000 works, or if it isn't better, get stability among the employees to level 7 shift so that you don't have turnover, which creates concern for parents. It's hard to say, well, I'll spend more money, but it's, you want to get stability and stop the turmoil, and inflation is going away anytime soon. It'll hopefully come down. But if we're paying what another community can pay, we can have slower increases than other people have to pay to keep up with inflation.
So do we have a consensus here to support for the board meeting this plan? That is really where we are.
Right. I have two more questions.
Sorry.
I was always under the impression, and it's a question for you, John, that you could not bifurcate benefit offerings based on, you could do it based on sort of doing workloads and things like that, but I don't think you could do that. Can you change? Can you have Lisa's benefits be different than Bobby's benefits in terms of healthcare costs?
Yeah, so
that's good.
We kind of talked through this with the attorney, and ultimately, as long as the group of people who are receiving grade 7 benefits is based off of certain skill set qualifications, which I know that that's our
perfect.
And this can't take away a benefit once it's given.
Right.
It just it's for new hires.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense.
And we're grandfathering the grade 1 folks currently based off of.
Then the second question I had is somewhat tied to my third question, but where do we expect these? It's not a lot of money, it's about $65,000 net, right? Is that coming from somewhere? Do we have to support this? Like, where is that money coming from?
This year it'll be grant money.
Grant money.
And then we budget next year that it would be less of a.
We'll figure out.
Any less money going into capital. So the $1 million transfer we make will now be.
Got it.
Considerably less.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have to
yep.
I actually have a better idea as to what the market is on.
And my third question is.
Wait.
No, I said my second was part of my third.
Okay.
That being said, you know, to me, I feel comfortable with this. I'm okay with it. I think what you said is absolutely correct. We need to deployments. It's good for the community. It's good for the park district. It's good for society. Finally.
And it's good for the children.
And it's for not, well, that's society. The children are part of society.
And it's good for jobs.
It's good for jobs.
I've been discussing better health care staff. I know it's been an issue that's come up again and again, particularly the fact that we've been exposing staff COVID to the air, but again, we're not paying for the health care benefits.
That's not
moral concern, and it's been like over and over and over again. And I think all of us parents were under the impression that our pay for the staff was competitive. To find out that it's not.
I think it used to be, and people are just raising it such a race to get staff that we were on the highest paid, and then within 2 months we weren't. Because people are dead. JCC just jumped up their pay. It wasn't like that.
Yeah. Right, and that's what happens.
They're desperate.
They have hours, they
have to do all these things. And I will say, you know, they ought to tack on the cost. Well, at some point, it is economical. It's like,
it's not.
You have to go to no care. You have to go to nail. That you move children at children's circle.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very
expensive.
I agree with you. I simply think that we have to, it's to the benefit of this board to discuss that, though, right? To mention that pay will, can we pass on the answer? No, it's no. But I do think it's something that we
have to. Well, the cost benefit analysis, you're paying for one nanny at $25 an hour versus having two kids at lunch, it doesn't make financial sense.
I think we can find a nanny.
I've been here before too. I got one in children's circle. I've had nannies, I've had children's circle, I've had ELC, I've had kids that floated from ELC to children's circle. I get it, and it's extremely, extremely tough. But I do think it's worthy of us to discuss. My third question is, and you guys can all shut me down if you like. Do we feel like for number two, we want to give a carte blanche, or do we want to say that indirect expenses or something that we will, taxpayers will subsidize up to 10% of the cost or 2 years, something like that? Or do we want to let this just kind of ride and see how it is?
I vote direct expenses and even ambiguous on
everything. You guys have to pass the budget every year, right? Yeah. So you're going to see the subsidy every year. So you can come back and say, no, we don't want to do that at any given point, and we'll say, okay, this is what we have to do. So we're just telling you that there's a possibility. We're gonna strive for that. Yep. That's what we do with every program, and look at the market conditions, look at what's happening. So we don't just, oh, well, great, we can just not even worry about it. We're gonna keep on working for
our mission says we need to provide an exceptional program. Right.
Right.
So we want to do the program that we say we're gonna do. We're gonna have to cut costs if we're gonna do it. Just want to avoid that we have to provide a program that we're not providing.
So what we're doing is we're just going to say what I'll probably write the policy is going to be all direct and most indirect. So it's more of right now the policy is written that you can't use any of that.
Right, but I don't want
to. Unlike any other, you don't have the policy. That was just when the Children's Circle was formed. That was the philosophy. So it'll really go to what all of our other programs are. Is that we, depending on demand and cost and things like that, that's how we base those programs on.
I get it.
Those were actually very good questions.
Very good questions.
And thank you. It's good work on the questions. I did appreciate that. So do we have consensus among us? Does anyone dissent to the presentation by staff? No. Okay, so you have your answer.
Excellent. Thank you.
Support you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Devin.
Okay. Yes.
So,
that's it. We don't have to go to the percentage.
Nope. Mm-hmm. How about that? Is that it? Okay. So, then we go to. I actually need a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. Please adjourn.
All right. Good job. Thank you all.